Good evening, baseball
Edge.
fans.
Happened to
It is Wednesday, April 17th. I can barely read the screen because my eyes are old, and I'm pretty sure that says 17. So if it's not, just pretend it is. Anyhow, I am Susie. That is Kelsey. This is Bourbon and Baseball, All the Balls edition. If you are on and you happen to see this gigantic band-aid that is on my nose, no, you didn't. Just pretend like you don't see it. My
don't
cat got
see
a
it.
little. It's because I am strategically placed and I'm only showing you this side of my face versus this side of my face. It looks like I have a big white booger on my face. It's not a
Oh,
booger, I
I like the
promise.
full
It's a
nose
band-aid.
ring. Okay, so I, yeah, it's this eye. I think this was like 2 years ago. My cat sleeps next to me on the outside of my shoulder, on my right shoulder. So he sleeps on like the outside edge of the bed. And in the middle of the night, one night, he jumped up and he claws onto the bed till we were just talking about how fat he was before we started recording, right? He latches into the bed to pull himself up the rest of the way. And instead of latching into the bed, he latched into my face, literally like a millimeter away from my eyeball. So I have,
Oh my
probably
gosh.
can't see it on YouTube, but I do. I have a scar. And the next day, like it happened at 3 a.m. And like that day, we were going to a Cubs Cardinals game at Wrigley Field. And so I had to wear like Nelly style, like a band-aid underneath my eye. And I had my sunglasses on. And I remember being at the bar after the game. We like made some Midwest friends, as you do, at Sports Central after a game at Wrigley Field. And I remember like keeping my sunglasses on as long as possible, but it like started to get dark. And I'm sure at this point I'm like talking to these people, and my husband and my friend are with me. And I'm like, I just want them to know that neither one of these guys with me did this to me. And it was actually the other man in my life, my 20-pound orange cat. So I feel you. You are in good company. Happens to the best of
Good.
us.
Yeah. This one was from my tiny black kitten who did not want to get out of one of my daughter's rooms. And let it be known that she did not want to be held and taken out of said room. And at first, I just thought she had just clawed me. And I was like, oh, it's fine. And then it hurt. It really hurt. And I was all, what is this wetness? That would be blood. That's delightful. So good. So, yeah.
Well, you have that going on. I got my wisdom teeth out like 48 hours ago, so my face is a little less mobile than normal. So do not make me laugh because it will hurt and I really won't be able to and I'll look weird. But yeah, so I'm gonna have resting bitch face the whole episode, and you're gonna have your cool questionable nose ring
Right.
or giant booger.
Giant booger. Yeah. We're gonna go with giant booger. That's what we're gonna go with.
This is a grind, Susie. We're just working through it all.
I'm telling you, man, between the not being able to record last night because my internet just wanted to be a gigantic jackass, this is what we're doing for you guys. So with that said, I will give you the rated R warning. This is a rated R podcast for all of the adult language, none of the nudity, just all of the four-letter words and the inappropriate adult humor, because there will be some. So with that said, we're going to roll straight into the news and the notes. And I apologize that we didn't get here on Sunday. I know you've been missing us. I know. Okay. My mailbox is full of DMs. And no, I'm just kidding. It's not. But I know that you guys have been missing us telepathically. I know these things. So let's talk about the first order of business, which was apparently eBay stole $1 bajillion from Shohei.
1100. Yes, 1100 million
Yes.
is, I think, the
Yeah.
exact number that came out, the official reports. Yeah, it's funny because obviously this came out probably almost a week ago now, but it seems like it's not news anymore.
It's
And
not.
I'm
And
sure
it's
that's
been.
exactly how it was intended to be by Major League Baseball. But yeah, it was pretty shocking just from the sheer amount of money. It was obviously like four times what we initially were told or speculated that it was. And the extents of which he went to make all this happen, and the extent of which they went to prove that and make sure that is what actually happened, it's all very interesting. What is your kind of overall, what's your high level take here?
First off, if you guys didn't dive into the 43-page
There's 37 pages,
document,
I believe, and you did read all 37.
I did. And then I was screenshotting various things that I found interesting slash shocking and highlighting and sending them to Kelsey. First off, the account that eBay was getting all of his money from had only the Angels paychecks in there. That was the only account that he had access to that had the money coming into. So just the Angels paychecks. None of the brand deals from Japan, none of the brand deals from North America, none of that, just the Angels paychecks. It goes on to say in that document that Shohei's financial people, tax people, management had asked multiple times to get access to this account. And they said, eBay flat out said no, because Shohei wants it to be secret, which I get it. Rich people have secret accounts. Okay. Like, we're hiding money. That's whatever. Neither here nor there at this point. But the fact that they asked multiple times and eBay said no, and then the management team in and of itself, I feel like, should bear the brunt of some of this responsibility.
Definitely. Because
how do you, as an agency that is dealing with one of the most high-profile athletes from Japan ever, not have somebody on your staff full-time that speaks Japanese?
Yeah.
Or even like a part-time, like a, hey, we've got a Japanese player coming in, I'm going to need you to translate, or just be on FaceTime to translate.
Yeah.
What are we doing here, Nez Bilello? What's happening? And so the fact that everything got filtered through eBay and therefore was sheltering Shohei, and in the 9,000 text messages between Shohei and eBay, there was no mention of gambling. So then obviously either they only talked about gambling in person, or
yeah, they never
eBay really did steal all of the monies.
Yeah.
And just betrayed his best friend, who, and at that point, I'm all, did you honestly like him? Were you just using him? Was that the whole goal? Was this like a long con?
You did send one of the pages that you sent me did say that he contacted Victim A, as Shohei is referred mm-hmm. to in all of this, and offered to be his translator in the United States. So it does seem like this was at least somewhat premeditated.
Yeah, the whole thing is just heartbreaking for Shohei. And then just super sketch on eBay's part. And the fact that the bookie was making threats against Shohei's life.
This is something that I was surprised I've not heard talked more about. And again, it's right here on these pages that you highlighted and sent me, where, yeah, like, this is some mob shit. He's like calling, the bookie is like calling and leaving messages, or
it was a text message.
Yeah. So it was in writing saying, mm-hmm. you're not returning my calls. I'm here in Newport Beach and I see Shohei Ohtani walking his dog. I'm just going to go up and talk to him and ask him how I can get in touch with you since you're not responding. Please call me back immediately.
Yeah.
That freaked me out. And like, protect Shohei Ohtani at all costs was immediately my thought there. And I hadn't mm-hmm. always necessarily thought like his hands are completely clean in all of this, but I don't know. There's a pretty good case here to make me think more along the lines of, yeah, it's almost embarrassing to the extent at which he was a victim. And I agree with you very much so that a lot of that embarrassment should be on his management, because yeah, oversight seems like just very understated.
And everyone's like, oh, I'm pretty sure I would know if $16 million was missing. Listen, if you were that rich, I guarantee goddamn to you that you are not checking your balances every day. Okay? That's not a thing that you're going to do. I'm doing it to make sure that my $300 bill, it goes through. We're just double checking, making sure
we
that the money's
supposed
to be.
We get right? you. But Shohei, okay. he does not. And he's especially not. Considering it was that one specific account that mm-hmm. it just puts into perspective like how little he's relying on his actual salary as a baseball player, which makes perfect sense because he was so willing to take a barely above league minimum, essentially. That's just not where the majority of his income comes from, particularly the income that he relies on and
right.
might remotely keep track of. So that all lined up too, and no one even particularly brought that to light.
Yeah. I really wonder how much it fucked eBay with Shohei deferring as much money as he did. Ooh. Was eBay just like, god damn it, Shohei, look what you did.
I'm only gonna have so much to play with now. Oh.
Was eBay just secretly freaking out, thinking, shit, now he's only gonna get $2 million a year?
Yeah.
I've already spent $180 million. Mind-blowing type of money over the course of 3 years. I think it started in 21. So yeah, 3 years.
From what they could find records of. And that's the other thing. There could have been a lot more. Yeah. I agree that there is part of it, a lot of it, that seems very like far-fetched or hard to wrap your head around. But
yeah,
if you we all have at least known of someone who has had mm-hmm. some sort of addiction issue or something where you're like, wait, I like feel like I know them. And that just doesn't seem like them. That is how addiction and this kind of stuff plays out a lot of the time. So that it's, yeah, it is really hard to believe, but it's something that a lot of us can't relate to. And
yeah, no, absolutely. Again, I really have to look at Nesbolelo and the entire like agency, because CAA, like that's what you're here for.
Yeah.
So that is what you're here for. So I don't know, maybe they rethink their business plan and have a translator on staff. Absolutely. At all times. Yeah,
I would think so.
To make sure that all of the things are being translated correctly and that everybody, both sides, taken care of.
Right.
And I just mind boggled me to know that literally everything was getting funneled through eBay. And now we talked about on another episode, Dave Roberts saying that barrier mm-hmm. had been removed to Shohei. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing it even more because now Shohei's doing interviews in English.
I do think that, yes, just even in the past week, we have seen more of his personality. And then it makes you think, is he really this super private person and all of that? And I'm sure that was the perception to his agency as well. And a lot of the people working around him was, if he wants to have his private account, like that's part of who he is. Those are things that are important to him. We want to be respectful of that. But is it, or has it all been, part of the language and the cultural barrier? And having someone that you're so comfortable with to be a buffer. I don't know.
Yeah. And that was another thing that I think it was Dallas Braden, our buddy Dallas Braden over on the Baseball is Dead podcast, had said something like, when you have the translator there the entire time, you go up to them and you tell them the joke. And then the translator has to translate the joke. And then everybody laughs. When the translator's not there, you go up. And you're talking like broken Spanish or whatever, and they're trying to talk broken English, and everybody's just laughing at how awkward the situation is. And you bond over the awkwardness. So you bond over that type of stuff. And when that's not there, and you can just translate the things, and the translator says, oh, he finds that funny. You just, okay. And then you just go back. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I could see that. And now that Shohei doesn't have that, I don't want to call eBay a security blanket, but I almost feel like that's what it was.
Yeah, I think that's a fair term to use. Actually, while we're talking about this, kind of one of the moments that I noticed from the past few days that we did see more of his personality was in the benches clearing brawl in California against the Padres. He came out with everybody and he is literally standing there like trying to mean mug somebody and then just like starts cracking up. And it made me see him for exactly how I think we want him to be and we assume him to be, in the sense that like he's not throwing punches. But I don't know. That was a fun moment to see. And it just is a small example of hopefully what we'll continue to get to see more of.
Yeah. Again, Nesbolelo, get your shit in order. Moving on to another agent that may or may not have his shit together. There was talk this offseason of the quote unquote Boris Four, all of the free agents that apparently were going to get all of the monies, and then none of the monies happened and nobody got the contracts that they thought. Cody Bellinger, Jordan Montgomery. Why am I only coming up with the two of them? Matt Chapman, thank you.
And Blake Snell.
Blake Snell. There we go. So one of those people who I was like, definitely deserves a big contract, or at least a steady contract, a long contract. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jordan Montgomery says, hey, Scott Boras, fuck you. I'm pretty sure he didn't actually
knowing say that. Jordan Montgomery, that's definitely what he said. Have you ever heard any interviews with him? He is like the most low-key like guy ever, which is why he just does not align. You think about like Bryce Harper and Cody Bellinger and like these big personalities like Juan Soto, like those are Scott Boras clients. It just makes sense. Jordan Montgomery mm-hmm. is literally the opposite, like the polar opposite of a Juan Soto or a Bryce Harper in terms of just his, how he is. He's so mellow. He is so non-confrontational. And I was so happy to see this because I do think Scott Boras is a level of scam artist that doesn't ultimately go over well for players or teams. And mostly I think it's hard, right? Because you don't want to seem like, I'm certainly not anti-players getting the most amount of money that they possibly can. These owners are making more off of them than they'll ever pay them. And that's just the way that it is. And even if they don't, even if it's a bad contract and it's a Steven Strasburg sort of a thing, I'm not going to feel bad for the billionaires at the end of the day. That's by no means what I'm saying, but it just makes the whole thing about Scott Boras, like he makes everything about him. And it ultimately doesn't play out best for the players, especially the ones like Jordan Montgomery, who exactly like you said, do deserve some long-term security. Mm-hmm. And deserve to have a say and have other variables that create value for them besides the almighty dollar. Because at the end of the day, I think that is a factor that plays in for everyone, location. There's so many different things that ultimately make a contract worth its value to someone.
Yep.
And I don't think Scott Boras allows his clients to take those things into consideration, especially the ones like Jordan Montgomery, who are not going to get the Juan Soto payday, the Bryce Harper payday. But they certainly deserve a good contract. And he fails those like mid-level guys. And that's why I feel just really like icky about him. And I'm so glad that Jordan Montgomery does too.
Yeah. Jordan Montgomery said, fuck you, Scott Boras. I will now be a Wasserman client. And apparently that's the big three, Wasserman, CAA, Scott Boras. I want to say Excel, I think, is another one as well. And I realize that's four. I can't count. That's okay. But obviously, those agencies are a little less known than Scott Boras. Like, you say the name Scott Boras.
Yeah.
Everybody knows.
You know what? While we're at it, it's like how we all know the name Angel Hernandez, right? Do we know any of the good umpires' names? No, we don't. No. We only know the skeezy ones, or the skeezy agents and the bad umpires.
Yeah.
And that's what sucks. We're not highlighting the fact that there are people out there actually doing a good job, because we're only aware of, especially the behind the scenes guys, right? They're not the ones that we necessarily want their names known.
Maybe, Kelsey, I apparently have only watched the signings for teams when Scott Boras has been their client and Scott Boras is at the table.
That's not a thing that other agents do.
Okay. I wanted to make sure.
I think it's very weird. And I would love to hear the guys at like Foul Territory or somebody like that, who, or anyone who has been a client of his, talk about it, because I think it's super fucking weird and no one has ever talked about it.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll see.
I was like, is this a thing?
We'll do some investigative work and be like, why? Okay. He talks at all of them. And again, it further plays into that narrative that I've created. And to some extent, I think we all read him for as being like this unnecessary barrier who he acts like he's got these guys like Max Scherzer who are so bought into him and that he has, because he has gotten deals for Max Scherzer and he has made life-changing things happen for Max Scherzer. And that's great. But Max Scherzer is like now his just like puppet on with the Players Association. And he has such heavy pull because of the fact that he controls so much of the money players in the Players Association. And it's just, at the end of the day, he certainly doesn't have anyone's best interest in mind other than his own. And he has a lot of power. And I don't know, I could talk about it in circles forever, but there's something that doesn't sit right with me about that guy.
Yeah, it's so weird. If you are watching this YouTube or you are listening to the podcast and you know the reason why, or if you've heard, drop it in the comments. Send us a DM. We would love to know. Like the YouTube. It helps the algorithm.
Yeah. If you've ever heard a particularly good interview with a player talking about why he chooses him as his agent, I would be interested in that too. Because I get it in terms of if it's as black and white as money, but literally every other part of it I don't get. So.
Yeah, it's weird. And we hear about Scott Boras doing the witty puns and the setting up his own backdrop at Winter Weekend, all of this stuff. And you're just like, why? What are we doing here? So I don't know, but good for you, Jordan Montgomery. Hopefully, maybe this evens out the market a little bit. I don't know.
Really interesting to see, because now he'll more than likely play the free agency market next season. So it'll be really interesting to see how that goes, how differently that goes for him, and how hopefully the things that he wants are prioritized a little bit differently. And here's the thing, it would take a lot more than just Jordan Montgomery leaving Scott Boras for the reign of Scott Boras to be over. But at least one step in the right direction.
We're going to hear about Scott Boras and all the things in the offseason as well, with all of the guys that coming up in free agency, Juan Soto, Alex Bregman. Although with the way that Alex Bregman is playing, maybe the Astros will just re-sign him because we can afford him because he's sucking. I don't know.
Don't worry, Scott Boras will put his spin on that too. Like, he has screwed over so many teams. And
yeah,
I don't know. What I'm really trying to say, Susie, is I think there's more to life than money, especially when you're making millions and millions of dollars. Like, maybe a handful of millions is just enough.
Yeah.
And maybe that's how Jordan Montgomery feels too.
Yeah. So let's hope. So, but one guy that got an extension that is not a Scott Boras client, he's actually a Wasserman client, Jordan Montgomery, is Tyler Glasnow. Now, I know he did this feat a while ago. There's been a couple of starts for other pitchers and whatnot, but we got to give our guy Tyler Glasnow a shout out. And that does hurt me because he is a Dodger. I know that. But Tyler Glasnow pitched a gem of a game, striking out 14 and just racking up all of the points. Not for me or somebody else on my fantasy team, but the fact that it was all clicking for him and he was able to strike out that many. And at that point in time, I was all, okay, can you do it again, Tyler Glasnow? And then his next start, he could not do it again. And I understand variables and the park that you're pitching in, and he has talked about the inconsistencies with the balls and all of that stuff. And so I get it. But how do you go from striking out 14 to getting lit up the next time you come out? Did you feel, were you okay? Were you a little sore?
The same thing happened to Bobby Miller. He pitched against the Cardinals. He struck out a career high 11 Cardinals. Oof. And then I saw him pitch at Wrigley Field exactly a week later. And he was out in the second or third inning because, yeah, he got multiple runs scored against him. And then he had one more start, which was also really spotty, before he was placed on the injured list, which we'll talk about. But yeah, it is interesting. I guess maybe we get a pitching enthusiast to dive into those potential inconsistencies. Because in the Bobby Miller start against the Cardinals, I guess they were in California. It would have been warmer. Mm-hmm. And then at Wrigley Field, it was very cold and windy that day. So there's those sorts of things. But colder is usually better for pitchers. It probably depends, I think, in terms of gripping the ball and that sort of thing. But if you're a West Coast player and you're used to it being
warmer, would be better because they could get the sweat and stuff. And
that's true. Really, it might depend on the guy. I know Miles Michaelis for the Cardinals definitely does not pitch as well when it's hot. That is proven stat in my book at this point. But yeah, I guess it's more so that the ball doesn't travel as far also when it's cold. So maybe that's more the advantage that they have, but that's not going to get you 14 strikeouts. So
no. Yeah. I was listening to the Chris Rose rotation that Tyler Glasnow is one of the co-hosts on. And Chris Rose was talking to him about that game. And he was saying that how apparently in Dodger Stadium, they have the velo and angles at which he pitches.
Yeah.
So the axes, the XY axes or whatever. Yeah. Not all the ballparks have that.
They have that up at Busch Stadium now too. It's new this year.
Yeah. So I guess he was looking up there and all of his pitches were doing what they were supposed to do. And he was just dotting corners and everything was clicking. So, but he is one of the guys that has to throw hard. There is no, okay, I'm gonna throw it 93. And then when I really need to get somebody out, then I'll dial it up.
Yeah.
Because when he did that, his ERA was 7 point something because he admitted it on. Oh, okay. He goes, this is what I do. This is what I can do. This is how I've trained. And I think at some point, if he continues down this road, I think he may get her again. That makes me so
sad. Obviously, the pitcher injuries are a huge point of conversation everywhere right now. And one of the big things is that, did we talk about it here, that there's hard science that has come out that basically to avoid any type of serious injury and basically Tommy John surgery being necessary, you shouldn't throw over 80 miles per hour until you're 26 years old. And that's obviously not going to happen because by the time you're 26 years old, you're you better be in your prime, maybe past it for some guys. That's something that I've heard speculation on of why can't the high school kids that are trying to get noticed and scouted, when they throw against the good hitters and they really need to get somebody out. Why can't they ramp it up then and show the scouts, I have this, but I'm going to manage it down the rest of the time for safety and health reasons. And it's just doesn't work that way.
The scouts aren't interested in that because it's like a one-off, like it's a fluke. They have, you right. have to be,
nor does it like to Tyler Glasnow's point, like he doesn't have the same kind of control or effectiveness mm-hmm. if the velocity is not also part of it.
Yeah. And see, when he was talking about that, it was super interesting again, because Justin Verlander, again, I came in on the tail end of Justin Verlander's career, right? Baseball Susie here being.
Oh, but he used to do that. Yeah. He would start, his velocity would go up mm-hmm. as he got deeper yep. into the game.
Mm-hmm. And it still does. It still does. So his fastball sits at right around like 93, 94 right now. Yeah. And then when he needs to, he'll ramp that bitch up into 96, 97. And I think in the playoffs last year, I think he hit 98, which he hadn't done in a while.
Wow.
When he needs to, he'll ramp it up, but he doesn't do that all the time. So yeah. It's just interesting that some people can and some people can't. And apparently, again, I came in on the tail end of Zach Greinke era. And apparently Zach Greinke had to change the entire way that he pitched because he lost his velocity mm-hmm. and he had to relearn how to pitch. And I would love to sit down with the pitcher one day and just go through the differences of being a starter versus being a reliever and what work that takes and what you have to do. What differences is there between, because yeah. you know, we talk so casually about, oh, just put those starters in the bullpen. It's fine. Where when it's like a whole different routine, it's a whole different mindset. And so I would love to talk to a pitcher one day. So if you know any pitchers that can do this, let us know. Again, in the comments, on the YouTubes, on the audio side, all of the comments. We would love that. Like the video.
We should okay? have, like we should, have you heard of Pitcher List?
Yes.
We should have Nick on from Pitcher List because he pitched in college, but he's like a total nerd about all of that. And we could totally ask him about this. So maybe we do a Pitcher List Ooh. Episode, especially with all of the injuries. And yeah, I've always been a fan of the guys because, you know, love me some Adam Wainwright. The Cardinals have never been the team that's going to sign the hardest throwing guys, especially in terms of starters, because they'll right. cost you. So I appreciate the art of pitching and the guys who have Verlander who have mm-hmm. that's why they're still playing, right? The longevity yeah. of their career is so impressive. And it's because their command is as big a part of their game, if not more, than the velocity.
Yeah.
So I dig that, but velocity is the name of the game for pitchers now. And it's all a part of it.
Yep. So we will stay on the Dodgers. Apparently this is now a Dodgers podcast, but we will stay on the Dodgers and talk about a situation that happened when Gavin Stone, one of their young pitchers, was pitching this last time around. He was in the midst of was it a perfect game or was it a no-hitter?
Yeah, it was a perfect game at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the game that I'm referring to is the Dodgers Padres game where Gavin Stone was throwing a perfect game. And it was like in the sixth, right? Sixth or seventh? It was later in the
Yeah. I think it was at least the fifth, maybe the sixth. Yeah.
Okay. And they threw in on Jerks and Profar if it was intentional. If it was not, it just got away from him.
There's regardless. No, he was throwing a perfect game. There's no yeah. way it was intentional.
I don't think he was like throwing at him, like brushing him back, you know?
Sure.
But apparently Jerkson took offense to it, started jawing at Will Smith, and then apparently the bench is cleared and all of the jawing happened. And then I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize at that point that it was a perfect game. I just yeah. saw the aftermath of it. And then you realized that it was a perfect game. And I was like, oh, yeah, that seems a little silly, but whatever. But then the fact that Will Smith.
That Will Smith. This no. Will Smith on the Dodgers, yeah. who is like the opposite personality-wise from, you know, what I read. I don't know. Is that how your perception of him? Like, I would think he's like very soft-spoken, like even-keeled. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at least from all of the things that I've seen, or because yeah. he's not showy, he's not whatever,
he's just soft-spoken. Yeah, he's just maybe not soft-spoken, but just.
And the quote came out that he said after the game, I don't know why we would throw at him. He's irrelevant. Will Smith, I don't know who the fuck you're talking to, but you better watch your fucking mouth because, sir, Jerks and Profar has 10 years in the game.
There's 700 Major League Baseball players at all on the planet right yeah. now. So yeah, I don't think there's any way you could say that. You could say it in regard to literally anyone. It's just not a good look. Especially someone, yes, who is tenured in Major League Baseball.
And I'm like, Smith, I understand that you got an extension, but you're still a baby relatively overall in the whole grand scheme of things. And have you seen Jerks and Profar's stats lately? He is lighting up that team. Will Smith, what are we doing here? And then for the next game, because karma's a bitch and the baseball gods don't like it when you say shit like that. Of course it had to happen that Mr. Irrelevant, Jerks and Profar, had to hit the double with the go-ahead RBI with the Padres to win that game. Just fucking love it. I just fucking love it. Like,
it's the same kind of thing as the Bryce Harper thing in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
2023.
Yeah. Like, you run your fucking mouth.
This, coincidence? This is what maybe, happens. But it seemed, yeah, that was the fuel to the fire.
Just, I'm like, why, Will Smith? Why? Like, you don't need to do any sort of bulletin board material, sir. Okay? Just, no. And I don't know. All I'm saying is, if I were the Padres, I'd be like, maybe we just let one go and just conveniently hit someone. Just saying.
It's not a nice thing to say, Will Smith. Yeah. It was like a verbal slap in the face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then, and Jerks and Profar took it in stride because literally the next game he was mic'd up. They asked him about it. And he's all, he's like, my emotions were a little high. And you could tell that the broadcast was trying to goat him into saying something. Mm-hmm. But they were trying to get a reaction. And he's like, no, he's overreacted. And he was like, there's some emotions. He's like, that's fine. I don't think he was trying to hit me. So you could just tell that the broadcast was like, really?
Yeah,
that's it. That's all we're going to get. I don't know. But speaking of good stuff, Jackson Holliday finally gets called up. Jackson Holliday, the son of Matt Holliday, the one that's tearing the cover off of the ball in spring training and apparently couldn't hit left-handed pitching very well. And that was the reason why he didn't start with the club. Gets called up literally, I think, 3 or 4 days before the deadline of if Jackson Holliday does win Rookie of the Year, then the Orioles will get an extra compensatory draft pick as well for Jackson Holliday winning the Rookie of the Year, along with a year of service time. If they didn't call him up now, they would lose all that. But with all of the noise that was being made around that Norfolk Tides AAA team and the 43 runs, I say 43, I'm only half joking. I want to say 29. They put 29 runs on a
closer to 30 than 20.
Yeah. 29 runs on a team. I want to say that his numbers have not looked great up in the major leagues.
And I do wonder how much of that is because of all of the noise and pressure being a part of the adjustment. And he doesn't look overmatched at the plate. I wouldn't say he doesn't seem like the moment is too big for him. It's just not happening yet. He is 1 for 22. So he's hitting 0.045 at the moment. He got his first hit just a few days ago on April 14th, finally, versus the Brewers. Mm-hmm. But I think he has 12 strikeouts. Yeah, so it's not offensively clicking yet. But at this point, I assume that the Orioles are seeing how he handles it. And that's like the most important thing, right? And that his defense holds up on the other side of the ball. And it's got to turn around soon.
Oh, yeah, you'd hope. But that's okay because the Orioles really don't need him. Because they have Gunnar Henderson just tearing the cover off the ball. Known ball knowers, that would be you and I, Kelsey. Colton Cowser. Colton Cowser, do you guys know
that? Colton Cowser might just be the Rookie of the Year, man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be surprised. Would not be surprised if Colton Cowser stole that. And it cracks me up that they call him the milkman and they moo while he's at bat.
Yeah, the Holy Cowser puns are.
Yeah. It cracks me up. And don't sleep on Jordan Westberg either.
Yeah.
Jordan Westberg is also doing wonderfully up there. Grayson Rodriguez, they just have a plethora of all of their young guys just doing really well. So they really don't need Jackson Holliday to do well. He can just slip in under the radar and under the radar, quote unquote, and just get the hits when he needs to. And defensively, he's still doing wonderfully. I want to say that I watched that first game. And I saw him make, I'm like, the ball's going to find you because he made, I think he turned a double play with Mountie at first and just was awesome. Congrats, Jackson Holliday, for getting your first hit. Another guy, I say he's a rookie. He's not a rookie any longer. He's been up in the show for a few years now. Shea Langeliers. I don't know if you know about Shea Langeliers. If you don't watch any Oakland Athletics in baseball, maybe not. Shailene Lears is their catcher that they got from the Braves in that Sean Murphy trade. And Shailene Lears single-handedly won the Oakland A's a game against the Rangers, legitimately. Mm-hmm. And congrats, Oakland A's, for winning that series. That makes my heart just sing so much that you guys beat the Rangers. Congrats. But apparently Shailene Lears is from the area, like up there in Arlington.
Oh.
And so he had a lot of friends, a lot of family. That's at that awesome. Game.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times I feel like, I don't know, maybe this is I don't have any hard data on this, but I feel like sometimes when you hear the players are playing in their hometown and they have a lot of people there to watch them, they don't end up doing as well because it's like a distraction and the pressure is on and stuff like that. So that's awesome that it happened under those circumstances.
Yep. He's literally single-handedly won them the game because I think the score was like 3-0 and it was just all Shay. Good job. Good job, Shay. That makes me so happy for you. We've talked about this guy a couple of different times and just how good the vibes seem around this guy because we're big vibes people on the podcast, right? We love the vibes. And the vibes are good in Pittsburgh because who'd have thunk that they were going to have a winning record? Apparently Pirates fans, if you ask them, they knew. Did you really? Good on you that you do. But Rowdy Tellez is their... Is he the first base DH?
Yeah.
Or is he just the DH?
I have seen him at first base here and there.
Okay. So big old Rowdy Tellez. I get Rowdy Tellez and Daniel Vogelbach mixed up in my head sometimes.
You and everyone, I think.
Good. I'm glad I'm not the only one. So if you guys don't know that Daniel Bard is the... Oh, yes. Your dog definitely thinks it's down. Bednar.
Bednar is what June was telling me. Yes. Daniel Bednar.
I was like, wait, Daniel Bard is on the Rockies. That is not the correct name. David. Yes. Thank you. So David Bednar is the closer for the Pirates. And apparently he blew save. And Pirates fans are booing him. Pirates fans, what are you doing? What are you doing? You haven't been good in forever. Why are you booing? What's going on? You won 5 games and you're all, oh yeah, no, we're winners. What's happening? Pirates fans, tell me. That makes me sad.
He's blown more than a couple saves. Something's off with him right now. I'm trying to see how many he's actually blown so far. But yeah, no, it was not a... I realize it
wasn't like a one-off thing, but it was like three.
Yeah, but it was still like, yeah, it's early. And this is a guy who...
He missed spring training, like,
very
he?
Solid for you. Yeah, he's getting a late start. Okay. And yes, it did seem very premature. I am not a fan of fans booing a player on their team, like, ever, really. But yes, I agree that, especially under those circumstances, it seemed a little premature to be upset about it.
Yeah. And I was like, what's happening? If you guys didn't see this, it was adorable. And I just absolutely love Rowdy Tellez. My opinion of Rowdy Tellez just skyrocketed even more than I already had. After the game of one of the games that he had blown the save, the reporters were asking him the thought process and what was going through his mind. And Rowdy Tellez just stepped in and puts a hand on his shoulder and says, this is not what we do. This is not what we do here. Like, this is an all-star closer here. And this is not what we do. We're better than this. Come on. Mm-hmm. And it just warmed my heart. Like, my cold, dead, black heart. You know that when, like, I get, like, the feels, it's good shit.
Susie, I think you and Rowdy Tellez have very similar personalities, actually.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a prickly pear cactus plant.
So is Rowdy Tellez a lot of the time. He has that very sarcastic, dry humor. But yeah, it was even better to see this moment from him because of how he normally is.
Yeah.
And there are things that are, like, taken out of context from him if you don't know his personality and you don't haven't had the opportunity to see a number of interviews with him and have him on your team. So yeah, I think that was such a great moment that will have all of baseball seeing him differently and appreciating that personality.
Yes, absolutely. And another guy on the Pirates that we have to appreciate, Andrew McCutchen.
Yeah.
Andrew McCutchen. Shout out Andrew McCutchen and 300th home run. And the fact that he had been other places and had gone back to Pittsburgh to make that his home, like, rooted in Pittsburgh. I love it. I freaking love it. And that makes me so happy. And the fact that Pittsburgh is not really a good team. Like, you can see it there. And he's, and like the fact that like he went back because he just enjoyed the people and he enjoyed the team. Like, that just, that makes my heart so happy for him.
Did you see the video? I felt like this was like Pittsburgh. I'm sure they did not feel this way, but I took it as, oh, the Pirates are like showing the Dodgers how it's done actually right now, because they took a video and posted really great pictures of the little boy who caught the ball and him meeting Andrew McCutchen, and he brought it back to him and they exchanged the ball, and Andrew McCutchen signed a bat for him and took pictures with him and had a whole conversation with him. And it just, they posted that on social media like right after the game. And
oh my,
the petty part of me, they should have CC'd the Dodgers. Hey, Dodgers admin, pass this along.
Right.
This is how it's done.
Yeah, this is how you do it, peoples. I love that. I love that so much. And I can't help but appreciate the baseball players that take the time out of their day to just be good human beings. And just literally, Jose Altuve, for as much shit as this tiny little man gets, he is the epitome of a great guy. Okay. So I just need all of you to know that if ever you are around me and you start booing Jose Altuve, I will throw hands. I will fucking throw hands. The bail money is already set aside and I will throw hands. This guy, he is literally, he will bring kids out onto the field and just sign shit for him. Just sign shit, talk to him, take pictures, and is just so selfless about it. And this man just gets so much hate from like literally every other fan base, and it just drives me absolutely fucking insane. And he just takes it on stride.
Maybe we should do an episode about, I guess this was like the 40-man fine was along these lines of, there, because there are players that I don't care what team they're on, there are just certain players that I'm drawn to. And, so, and sometimes it has nothing to do with like their statistics or anything. Because I'm sorry, before last season, who was rooting for Lourdes Gurriel Jr.? Me. That's it. Us, known ball knowers. But just random guys like that. He's not even the best example. There are just players that I pick out of obscurity, but I do think that a lot of it is that it's more of the heartbeat guy. And in an industry that is so stats driven and performance driven, it's easy for that to seem like it doesn't matter, but it does matter, because it's entertainment as much as anything. And there's a lot of people, especially kids, who watch the game and have no idea who has the highest batting average or the most home runs or best launch angles or whatever. Right. And they don't care. That's why we love talking to people about their stories of finding their fandom and growing up, because almost everybody has this like obscure player that they had some special connection with. And it goes back to exactly that kind of thing that Jose Altuve is doing.
Yeah. And it again, we hear about all of the stories, like how Joey Votto last season got thrown out of a game and the little girl was just in tears because Joey Votto was her favorite player and she'd never get to see him. And he goes the next game and gets some tickets like to the next game so that he can go and give him a bat and a ball. And it just, I'm about to cry just thinking about that, because Joey Votto doesn't need to do that shit. Joey Votto, it's whatever to Joey Votto, right? And the fact that he was like, oh my gosh, I just broke this little girl's heart. And again, it doesn't matter to him,
right?
But to the little girl, that's like the biggest thing on earth, right? And I just, the fact that he just can think about the situation in and of itself, that he appreciated it and was like, no, that's the whole thing. She came to see me, and right. I wasn't there, and I'm like, oh, I love that. And our friends Brewers Bay, tweeted out to Twins fans about the little boy who got his autographed ball taken and loved Byron Buxton, and all of the peoples. Shout out Twitter.
Yeah.
You're not just a cesspool of idiots. Sometimes good things can happen on Twitter. And this was one of the things. A ton of people reached out, a ton of people tagged Byron Buxton, and he replied and said that he got him. And he was going to, like, I guess he sent a DM, or somebody sent a DM and it got to him, and he's going to take care of the little boy. And apparently, I think it's going to be at the next game. Maybe it already happened.
I think this all just played out today. So I think you're right.
Today,
happening in the next game.
Yeah. So it just like, just little shit like that, stuff like that. I love it. I absolutely love it. And you cannot tell me that baseball isn't the best for things like that. But baseball absolutely fucking sucks when you love a team and they're absolutely fucking sucking right now.
I did want to ask you, at what point are we concerned? At what point is the sample size too large to say it's too small of a sample size? And listen, this is coming from me. I was in a worse place at this point in time last season. So I'm not cackling in your face or anything. I'm just saying it is wild that I was looking at the standings before we were recording to see if there was any other teams that are like, really, the sample size is small enough that if you're at 500 or just below 500, like whatever, that could happen to any team at this point in time. The Dodgers, I think, are pretty close to 500 at this point. Nobody is running away with anything. And if they are, there's also some teams that like probably will end near the bottom that are at the top right now. Yes, but the Houston Astros have lost what, four times as many games as they have won right now?
And I don't know.
Almost. They're 6-14. So maybe not that much, but I was thinking 4-14, but they're 6-14, I think. Which is pretty wild. And you look at it and you're like, maybe they played, what's their schedule? No, that's not really.
It is. Because literally the only team that we played that people expected us to win
6-14
was the Kansas City Royals.
And yes.
Known ball knowers, you and we knew.
We knew the Royals were coming.
Royals.
Yeah. Okay. That was the series that I was most dialed into with the Astros. So that's where I'm thinking like, oh, they probably played all these other not so great teams too.
No, we started off with the Yankees.
Oh, that's right.
We started off with the Yankees. We had the Yankees, then the Blue Jays, then the Royals, and the Braves. So we won against the Blue Jays. We split with the Yankees. We got swept by the Royals. We got swept by the Royals, and we got swept by the Atlanta Braves. Now, granted, we have an entire rotation on the fucking IL. Some of that was blow-up starts by guys that had, one guy that had no business getting a start in the major leagues because it was literally his first. He was in Double-A last season. He had one start in Triple-A, and he got called up to the show. Because it was his turn in the rotation and we literally had no other option. Got fucking shelled. I felt so bad for him. The bullpen was upside down. But the guys that we thought were going to be good are 7-8-9 guys. Brian Abreu, Ryan Presley, Josh Hader. What the fuck is the matter with y'all? I don't even know. Apparently moving everybody up an inning just fucks with everybody's brain. So that's all of those things. You're like, what the fuck? Ronel Blanco has been a fucking godsend. All right. So of the six games that we have won, two of those have been because Ronel Blanco himself, we cannot hit with runners in scoring position. It's our favorite fucking pastime. We just leave all of the runners just there. But this does lead me. It's a horrible way to lose games. It's just absolutely ridiculous. But this does lead me to a question that I have. One of the biggest sticking points this season. Okay, let me back up. Last season, our biggest black hole in the lineup was Martin Maldonado. We all knew it. The league knew it. It was a known fact. And I was beating the drum last season that Martin Maldonado should not be on this lineup, that he should be on the bench. He should be coaching. So last season, I expected the losing. I expected it. I fucking expected it. Yeah. It hurts more this season because my expectations were so much fucking higher. Mm. Now, I said in a past, I don't think it was in one of these All the Balls editions. I think it was on an Astros edition. I said that Jose Abreu is going to be the new Martin Maldonado. Yes. And I wish on everything that I was going to be wrong. I am not wrong. He is almost fucking worse than Martin Maldonado. And it's absolutely mind-blowing how bad Jose Abreu is. And it just looks he is trying to hit through molasses. And I say this as a person, obviously, who cannot hit a fucking ball as it is. I know. I understand that I have no athletic ability. I understand.
It's so stupid how we feel like we have to disclaim anytime we're like being critical. I understand. They're like the 1% of the 1%. Yeah. I absolutely get it. And I suck at everything. But can we talk about what they're supposed to be good at now?
But the fact that he's 37. Father Time is undefeated, motherfuckers. It cannot happen.
Yeah.
Except for Justin Verlander, apparently. But Jose Abreu is 37. And if I hear the reference of, oh, he's going to be the guy on the back of his baseball card one more fucking time, I'm going to scream. Last season, it was intangibles. This season, it is the back of the fucking baseball card. Jose Abreu, I love you, but it's time to hang it up, sir. It's time to hang it the fuck up. And I had questions for you, Kels, because we're in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
Both of our first basemans are sucking.
37 and sucking.
Yeah. That used to be
epic. Yeah. guys,
our Cardinals fans,
like you can't say
our Cardinals fans melting down.
Yes.
Over Paul Goldschmidt.
Yes, they are. I am not, because the main reason that I'm not is because Goldie doesn't get hot until the weather gets hot, and that's a thing. So I am not worried yet. And I also think it's like his timing is off. I feel like there's something mm-hmm. specific that is off that we've I don't think I've seen it happen to this extent mm-hmm. before, maybe. But there are always stretches. And again, like in 20 games, you can't say. On opening day, he had 3 hits. He was the only person on the team who had hits. So there's that. It's not like he's doing absolutely nothing. But yeah, it is. It's also just to your point, it's weird when there's this guy that is supposed to be like the big bat, like leading the charge. And I don't know. It happens one way or another to all of these players. It's one of my least favorite things about professional athletics, the way that it plays out, that like usually you go out when you go down. Like, you can't go out on top. Yeah. Not everyone is going to have the Albert Pujols trajectory of getting to have 3 months of magic.
Do you want to know Jose Abreu's stats? do you want to know? I'm going to tell you regardless if you want to know or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. His batting average is a .082. His on-base percentage is a .148. His slug is a .102. Did you know that you can have a negative OPS plus? You can have a negative OPS plus, people, because Jose Abreu has a negative 25. Negative 25.
See, Goldie's numbers are not good, but they're not there.
They're not Jose Abreu level. He is.
Yeah, he's still also is slashing. Like walking at least semi-regularly. Has Jose Abreu walked at all?
Apparently he's gotten 2 walks.
Yeah, I don't feel that's where I don't feel like Goldie's plate discipline is off, and it's more hopefully just a timing thing. And so there's still maybe some hope, but yeah, he's batting 190.
Yeah, his slash line is 190, 292, and 238, which is a whopping OPS plus of a 50. Hooray that it's
17 positive. Games. 17 games.
It's a positive. It's a positive number. Unlike Jose Abreu, that is not a positive number. In 15 games, Jose Abreu has struck out 16 times. Yeah, it's not a great
look. Yeah, no, in 17 games, Paul Goldschmidt has struck out 21 times. And I believe that, because that's the most troubling thing, is you're seeing, like you were saying, he's swinging through molasses. You're seeing him swing and miss like never before.
Yeah. So
that's concerning.
This led me down a path of other, we'll say superstars. I don't put Jose Abreu in a superstar category, but he's well known, as is Paul Goldschmidt.
Yeah.
These two other names I'm going to tell you are that superstar status, because these two motherfuckers are ice cold as well. Not as ice cold as Jose Abreu, but I think nobody is as ice cold as Abreu.
Maybe Jackson Holliday.
Maybe Jackson Holliday. Yeah. But I think even Martin Maldonado may have better numbers than these guys. Then that's saying fucking a lot. Okay. Yankees fans, I need your opinions on this. I need to know your thoughts. Why? How? What? What's going on with Aaron Judge? Because mm-hmm. Aaron Judge's slash line is 182, 337, and a slug of 394. Like, that big man, 394, like what? For a OPS plus of 111. Now, granted, 100 is your average ball player. That's, I guess, your level of what you want to be, at least 100. Okay, so he is 11% better than your average ball player. But this is Aaron Judge that we're talking about, that got $4,000 bajillion and the infamous arson Judge and all of the quotes like 2 summers ago. Is the toe bothering you again, Aaron Judge?
Yeah, he's got a few more years left on his contract than Abreu and Goldschmidt. So I think that, and by the way, Martin Maldonado is only batting 0.65. So I'm like, I don't even know like how to say it. He's batting 69.
Okay, so I lied. Jose Abreu is a little bit better than Martin Maldonado.
Yeah, so let that take some comfort.
yeah. Also, Phillies fans, I also need you to chime in. I need you to chime in because Bryce Harper slash line is 215, 301, 462. Okay, but for an OPS plus of 108. This is not the Bryce Harper that y'all paid for.
And was that contract extension?
Apparently he's striking out a bunch and Kyle Schwarber is walking a bunch. And I just need to know, was there some sort of body switcheroo that they did?
Well, wasn't his back bothering him like before the season? And it was right around the time that this comes back to the Scott Boras sketch conversation. His back started bothering him and Scott Boras was trying to get him an extension while he was potentially going to start the season on the IL or having some issues. And yeah, it seemed like once again, Scott Boras was like, I'm going to try to lock you up some more money before you get hurt. And you could be a totally different player. Like, who knows? We swindled him.
He already signed the watching your contract. Like, what is happening, Bryce Harper? I don't know. But so Phillies fans, I need you to chime in. Yankees fans, I need you to chime in. What's happening? Are they slow starters as well? Obviously, you guys are more locked into those teams than I am. So I just see bigger picture here. So again, like the YouTube video, put it in the comments. I need answers. I need the answers, people. If you don't want to put it in the YouTube, DM me, tweet me, send me a carrier pigeon with the answer. I would love that. Please and thank you. All right.
I thought you were going to ask me if the Astros are going to be in the Cardinals situation from last season because they lost their Yadier Molina.
I know that you are not comparing Yadier Molina to Martin Maldonado because you are a known ball knower. You are a known ball knower. And at no point in time are we putting like Yadi and Martin Maldonado in the same category. That's not what we're doing here. But I do hear the peoples on the Twitters that are saying, if Martin Maldonado was on this team, this wouldn't be happening. Absolutely it would be. And it would be fucking worse because we would have two of them in the lineup. Mm-hmm. As it is now.
Yeah.
As it is now, we got fucking Jose Abreu. That's the automatic out. His backup, John Singleton, which Tom and I talked about this on the Astros edition of Bourbon and Baseball. If John Singleton was the everyday first baseman, I think he would be an average at bat. He would be right around your 100 OPS plus. He wouldn't be horrible. He wouldn't be a superstar. In this lineup, we just need not a fucking automatic out.
Yeah.
That's what's happening. Jose Abreu has gotten pushed down in the lineup to eighth now, which is the lowest that he's ever been. And yet,
yeah,
he's still coming up to bat with runners in scoring position with two outs and just straining all of the people in them all.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. All right, but like we can't just look at Jose Abreu because Alex Bregman over here is rocking a fucking 84 OPS plus. And I'm all fucking Alex Bregman. But I think he's all in his head and now the batting order switched. So Breggy was batting second. He got moved to fourth. And he was pressing a whole hell of a lot. And today he got moved up to third and he drew three walks. And this coming from the guy who legitimately was swinging at first pitches and rounding out, like, popping up. And that's just not Breggy. Like, he's known for his like super patient at bats and working a count and doing all that shit. And I'm all, it seemed like it got into his head that the pressure of being the cleanup hitter got into his head and he was just fucking it all up. So got moved to third and apparently it seemed to help, but apparently not so much. But the other guys in the lineup are not pulling their weight. This motherfucker over my shoulder. I love
Jeff. Yeah, I benched him.
Absolutely.
My fantasy team.
As you should. You fucking should, because he's been horrific. And I'm like, what are we doing, Jazz? What are we fucking doing here?
That's ultimately the Cardinals' biggest problem right now, too, is the offense is just not clicking, which is just really interesting that it seems like we're all in our own little bubble of fandom, but there are a lot of big bats. To your point of calling out the Phillies and the Yankees fans and all that, that are just not doing the things that are expected of them. And I think that's important to remember when we get super salty and mad that all the players at one point or another go through times like this. Yes, perhaps not all hope is lost just yet.
I'm really hoping there's not. Like I said, we've had an entire starting rotation on the IL and guys who should not be pitching in the major leagues.
Yeah.
Pitching games for us and just absolute blow up innings. And you're all, what the fuck is happening? Why is this happening? Who did I piss off? What baseball god? And I think that's why we talked about it earlier. Baseball gods don't like it when you're being a fucking cocky bitch. They heard all of us. They heard all of us saying, oh, if we have a lead in the sixth inning, it's over. 7-8-9 going to come in. Nope. They said, Ryan Abreu, Ryan Pressly, Josh Hader, you're all going to suck for a little while. It's going to turn around. I just know it. It's just going to be a little painful while we do go through the turnaround. We're going to jump into the to the IL because we got some news. Justin Verlander is coming back. He will be starting on Friday. So just know that the Nationals will win that game 1-0. And Justin Verlander will have pitched 6 innings and muck out 5.
It will not matter.
And just did not get any run support because for some odd fucking reason, the Astros just do not like to give JV run support. They just say, JV's got it. He don't need runs. We're good. Every time. Every fucking time. Just watch.
It is weird how the consistencies that play out with certain pitchers like that. It's very weird.
No.
I don't know, man.
But JV's coming back, which will push one of the guys that has been a little bit more inconsistent down. So Spencer Arrighetti, who had one of those blow-up starts for us, did get optioned back to AAA. So JV comes back. Spencer Arrighetti goes down. Jose Urquidy and Framber Valdez. Framber Valdez is not rehabbing because he didn't really need a rehab because there was no MRI or anything, but he should be back, I think, in this next rotation turn as well, which will push down either Hunter Brown or JP Franz, I think. Mm-hmm. So we will have those two guys. So if those two guys come back and we start sucking like this, then
that might be, that's it.
That may be the panic. Okay. That may be the panic time.
Fair enough.
I'm going to say, apparently you're not supposed to panic until All-Star break. That's so says Tom.
I think I'm a panic. I do not look at the standings until after Memorial Day because they just don't mean enough until then.
I don't know. I'm going to look at them now and be sad. I'm going to be sad because at no point in time did I ever imagine that we would be last in the AL West. At no point in time. But you know what? Again, baseball gods, they don't like it when you're cocky bitch. They said, fuck you, Susie. You said the AL West runs through Houston. Look what we're going to do. Apparently runs through Texas. It don't run through fucking the Rangers either. So Angels, I'm looking at you, Angels. That's what I'm doing because Mike Trout's single-handedly taking that fucking team on its back. And then Anthony Rendon has like multiple games with hits.
He's playing baseball, which is more than we can say for him at other times.
This is very true. And I don't know what happened to the Seattle rotation. I said nice words about the Seattle rotation, Luis Castillo and George Kirby and Logan Gilbert. What the fuck are we doing? I don't know what happened to you, Luis Castillo and George Kirby. I dropped George Kirby.
Yeah, from my fantasy team. Luis Castillo.
It hurt my heart. I don't know. So all of that said, we're still only 4.5 games back from
the exactly. league.
But we're sharing last place in all of our divisions with the likes of the Chicago White Sox and the Miami Marlins.
And the St. Louis Cardinals. It's fine.
And St. Louis Cardinals. Yeah. Yeah. Just all of the people that we thought were going to be at the bottom. Speaking of the IL, we're going to tell you a little bit about the IL and how many players are on the IL and maybe a little bit of why.
There's so many. There's more than there's we so can get to, but the big ones, we mentioned Bobby Miller, starter for the Dodgers, is on the IL. I'm not sure. Did they come out and say what's even up with him? Because that was one where I saw they posted it and Dodgers fans were losing their minds. It was seemingly out of nowhere. Okay, it's a shoulder. Not Ooh, great.
Not great.
15-day IL due to right shoulder inflammation.
Yeah, that's...
But that reads, because it was something, it wasn't like he got pulled from a game or something. He had that start against the Cardinals and then his next two starts, but something was up. And we'll see. Hopefully that doesn't turn into anything more serious or more long term. Unfortunately, Trevor Story's shoulder, definitely more serious or long term.
Oh my God. I felt so bad for Trevor Story because he wasn't raking, but he was definitely the shortstop of that team. And it looked like he was heating up defensively. He was doing great. And I feel so bad for him because he's had that label of injury prone. They've all been injuries like this where it's like, how can you prevent this? It's not like soft tissue injury or something like that. It's like he ripped his shoulder out of his socket. And
yeah, like we all saw him go down on the field. It was, an in-play kind of injury.
Yeah.
He is out. He had surgery and he is out, expected to need at least 6 months to recover. No chance to return this year. And that's after he didn't play at all last year.
Oh my God. Another guy that apparently is not on the injured list, but that maybe should be. That did you see this game where the Rockies had to pinch run?
Oh, with the pitcher?
Kyle Freeland?
Yes.
The Rockies just said, you know what? We ain't got nobody else. Kyle Freeland, our literal...
I guess I didn't, like, It is weird. It is weird. I, as a National League fan, in where still the majority of the time I've been watching baseball, there like wasn't the universal DH. That's not like a completely unheard of thing in that time. It is now. So it certainly was weird, but I think that's why it initially didn't raise red flags for me. But also it's the Rockies. So they're doing their own thing.
But what are we doing?
The bench wasn't like empty.
That's why I was so confused. I'm like, why are you pinch running your quote unquote ace? There's, let's just be really honest. There is
Rockies. So
the Rockies. Okay. Yeah. He'd be like a five on any other team. Regardless. There are other guys like Kyle Freeland. What are we doing here? So he collided at home plate and separated his non-throwing shoulder. Apparently, though, it says he's supposed to make his next start.
Wow.
On next Friday. I guess good for you. That wasn't your throwing shoulder. Throwing arm.
Yeah.
Throwing shoulder. That blew my mind. So
how often do you Kyle Freeland practice sliding? Probably not a lot.
he's like, hey, put me in, coach. I'm feeling froggy. Look, I don't know. I don't know.
Bud Black, if you want to come on the show and tell us about it.
Please do. We would love that. So another feeling froggy situation. Tyler O'Neill and Rafael Devers collide in the outfield. Were you not yelling? Was Rafi not yelling? Did Rafi not hear you, Tyler O'Neill?
I don't know. It was definitely Tyler O'Neill's ball. It was the left fielder's ball or the outfielder's ball. I don't know. But it was just a really ugly situation because, yeah, they collided super, super hard. Tyler O'Neill has 8 stitches in his head. He is sitting for the next couple of games. I think he is potentially going to play tomorrow, though, because he has cleared concussion protocol.
So he has. Okay. Mm-hmm. That was my next question. But Rafi stayed in the game. So obviously, yeah. Rafi was fine. But where did he get these stitches, Tyler O'Neill? Where did he get these
stitches? In his head, I think.
Okay.
Almost like his forearm.
So did something cut him? Or was it?
I'm not sure what. He was definitely cut. Yeah. In his head. I'm not sure what it was that cut his head. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't. It was
not pretty.
It was not great.
Really scary because luckily it wasn't any worse than stitches and he's cleared concussion protocol, but he's obviously been playing really well for the Red Sox and he's another one that's notoriously injury prone. And yes, a lot of the injuries have maybe been more or less in his control from his style of training. There's so much speculation over all of that. We don't need to get into that, but this obviously not that kind of thing. So you don't want to see him taken off the field even more so.
Yeah. And leading all of MLB with homers, known power hitter, Tyler O'Neill. We knew that. But it just, yeah, it was not a good look. And I felt so bad. I literally gasped when I watched it. And I'm all, and then they like kept replaying it. I'm all, stop replaying.
No, yeah. It always feels so weird when they replay those things. And that is just, it's an example of why not having a solid defense and like investing in that, at least to a certain extent, is dangerous. And the Red Sox probably have one of the worst defenses in baseball right now.
Yep.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. It's
not great for number winning games for safety, functionality.
Yep. We will stay with the Red Sox as well because Nick Pivetta, also on the IL, is on the 15-day and he will resume playing catch Saturday. Apparently, it was just a mild elbow strain. And it's always iffy when the elbow is involved with pitchers. And Pivetta was doing so well this season. And it just sucks for that starting rotation that you're just like, who's going to pitch for you, Red Sox? What's happening? And then the Red Sox said, fuck all of y'all.
We heard
you talk your shit. And look at us, rocking one of the best ERAs in the MLB. And we're all, MLB, not the MLB. And Tanner Houck threw a complete game today. Okay, Tanner Houck, look at you. Now, we're going to revisit this on his next start and see how he does.
Yeah.
And see if he gets blown up or if he feels good. We shall see. But another couple of guys, Josiah Gray, another pitcher, goes down with Tommy John. Yoan Moncada from the White Sox. That one just looks so painful. When he was running to first.
Yeah.
And he literally just fell down. Like, his leg exploded. I'm all, oh my God. I felt very bad for him. Seiya Suzuki of the Cubs also hurt with an oblique. He's out for 4 weeks.
Yeah. Huge bummer. Because he's a game changer in that lineup. Yep. And maybe a window here, Cardinals, to pick up your offense because Seiya has been making it happen for the Cubs. Yeah. So that's a big hit for them.
Yeah. But Michael Busch said, hold my beer.
Yeah. Also, they have Michael Busch, so it's fine. But he is doing all the things. I think he is going to be one that stays hot, by the way. So hopefully he stays healthy. I don't think it's a fluke. I think he's for real.
For real.
What is
I am for real.
He's also, unfortunately, also for real is we are not going to see Spencer Strider for the rest of the season, which is just a huge L for all of baseball as one of the best pitchers in the game right now, because he is also going to have surgery and be out for the rest of the season.
Not a full Tommy John, though. It is apparently just the internal brace system, which is one step lower than Tommy John. However, I just want y'all to be very careful with that, because that is what Lance McCullers had. And it turns out he needed Tommy John anyhow. So we had, it was just, it's one of those things where you're like, cool. So instead of just nipping it in the bud and doing a full Tommy John, we just delayed the Tommy John and now we're out again. So.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't know.
So hopefully,
I
think
that's more common with guys in the field that have Tommy John, that they are, they do the internal brace procedure as opposed to Tommy John. But yeah, either way, it absolutely sucks. And Braves fans are distraught beyond consoling. Do you think this changes? Like, I don't know. How do you feel any differently about the Braves' dominance in the NL East?
Fuck the Braves.
It's also been a hot mess. So
yeah, Max Fried, but they figure it the fuck out.
Yeah.
Literally, they score all their runs in the fucking eighth, ninth inning. And it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. I'm not ready to jump off a building at fucking all, because they got Marcell Ozuna fucking hitting bombs. And although Matt Olson, what happened, Matt Olson? I drafted you thinking that you were going to hit all these bombs.
God, is it just everyone that we drafted?
No, because I hit on William Contreras and Jared Jones. I didn't draft Jared Jones, but I hit on Jared Jones and Bryce Turang. Man. Those are my three that I'm very proud of. Why I'm proud of the two Brewers guys that I drafted that literally no one else was going to draft because they were under the radar. This girl. Known ball knower. Okay. But Jared Jones, rookie pitcher for the Pirates. I dropped Shane Bieber before his second electric start, where he struck out 9, for Jared Jones. And I had a feeling in the back of my head, and I was like, I wonder if he's going to stay healthy. I was like, fine. I picked up Jared Jones. I dropped Shane Bieber. Shane Bieber went out and fucking shoved one game. And then it was like, JK.
No more.
Tommy John.
Gotta be in it for the long haul.
I was like, yeah, I'm like, hooray. However, Jerry Jones will probably be on an innings limit since he is a rookie, because this last game, he was fucking shoving and they pulled him at 59 pitches. 59. Granted, he was like in the fifth inning.
Wow.
But 59 pitches. I was all, okay. Like, I understand he is on an innings limit, but what are we doing? They ended up losing that game. I don't want him going out throwing a fucking complete game here, but 59 pitches, you probably could have,
yeah.
I don't know, give him a little bit more run, but I don't know, not me. So it's, I don't know, Matt Olson, I need you to pick it up as well. But no, they have freaking Austin Riley, and they had Ozzie Albies before he went down.
Yeah, he's going to be out for a few weeks.
Big toe fracture? Is that what that?
Yeah.
Michael Harris gets moved up to the lineup in the two spot.
This is why we talk about Alex Anthopoulos in the offseason, and they're like, why is he doing all these things? He doesn't really need to do anything. And he's, I need to do the things, because this is why.
Yeah. And then they just slot in Luis Guillorme. Mets fans, are you just punching air right now? Are you punching air right now? Because Luis Guillorme is on the fucking Braves, just slotting in, just doing the things. I just remember all the hate that Luis Guillorme got on the Mets. And he's just right on in. Freaking, I think he had a double today for him. Go ahead, run, I think. Anyways, but yeah. Just that entire lineup. And Reynaldo Lopez, where did he come from? He came from somewhere. Was it the White Sox?
Yes. Yeah, and he has not been a starter for a while.
Yeah, I think he K'd 9. Yeah, it was just, so it's just, it's one thing after another. So no, I have no worries about the Braves.
No longer have worries about the White Sox, because they have done what they needed to do finally, and they signed Tommy Pham to a minor league deal. And
is that what the White Sox need?
It's what White Sox fans have been waiting for, I can assume. He's going to earn $3 million if he plays in the majors, with up to $1.5 million in incentives. And the White Sox have until April 25th to add him to the major league roster, or he can request to be released. And then he also receives a $500,000 bonus if he gets traded, which is interesting. That's something the White Sox are thinking about already. So I don't know. It's weird. In all due respect to Tommy Pham, like, why didn't this happen way earlier? And why is this all that he got? I don't really get it.
I don't know. Why is Brandon Belt not fucking signed? Why haven't the Astros signed Brandon Belt, who's rocking an OPS plus of 135? Who knows? I'm not salty about this at all.
No. I don't have the answers.
I think Kike Hernandez did a whole very candid interview about this, saying like how none of the players really got what they were thinking that they were going to get, and that all of the offers that came in were all very similar. And I guess normally that doesn't happen. And so I don't think he went out and used the C word being collusion, but I'm pretty sure there was some bad. And I'm like, there's gotta be someone talking to somewhere. Like how this hasn't happened before is beyond me.
Yeah. It's easy to draw the line, but I think I'm sure the analytics plays into it too. I think more and more teams are probably using really similar formulas to spread them out these contracts, just because it's more black and white for them. And that's what they're trying to do in any way, shape, or form, in any way that they can.
Yeah.
And here's the Tommy Pham. We're talking about these 37-year-olds today. Tommy Pham is 37. And maybe that's a big part of why he landed where he did in terms of the money. And I don't know.
Yeah.
I still think it's a little weird, but I'm sure that's the easy answer.
And I'm saying this. And Astros fans are clamoring for one of our AAA kids to come up and play first base, who has really never played first base ever, but everyone's pointing to his strikeout rate, and I'm all, bro, that's what we have now.
Yeah.
In Jose Abreu. At this point, get Joey Loperfido up. Let him strike the fuck out, because when he gets a hold of one, it will get launched over the fucking fence, because Joey Loperfido is leading the minor leagues in home runs right now. But then again, I caution myself and say, okay, but Joey Loperfido is no Jackson Holliday, and look at what Jackson Holliday is doing up here. So I realize there is a give and take. However, Joey Loperfido is older. I think he is a little bit more seasoned. He's been around. Obviously, Jackson Holliday's been around, but Jackson Holliday's a freaking baby. He's like 20. So there's something to be said about that too. But we've been clamoring for these younger guys, and I've been clamoring for Brandon Belt, that I'm like, dude, he can hit left-handed pitching. Hell, I'm pretty sure he can hit right-handed pitching better than fucking Jose Abreu at this point. What are we doing? But it's obviously we can't. Jim Crane is not going to eat that freaking contract. If he does, that just admits defeat. And I don't think he's going to do that, because he is a very proud man. But take a page out of the fucking Diamondbacks book, y'all. They literally DFA'd Nick Ahmed, who had been with the organization for 43 years. I don't think 43 years. 10 years. Whatever. And they DFA'd Madison Bumgarner. How the fuck are you going to DFA Madison Bumgarner? D-back said, sorry, we cannot hold your dead weight. And look what that did. Look where it took. Looking at you, Astros. I don't know who you can pull up for first base for.
Oh, we have plenty of first base in the system. Alec Burleson can play first base. Lucas Baker is in AAA, who's a big home run guy in AAA. Paul, but here's the thing, and I don't know about Jose Abreu, but Paul Goldschmidt is still the most elite first baseman. Like, he's the guy you want over there on the field, 110%.
If you're not watching the YouTube video, I'm literally shaking my head. I'm legitimately just shaking my head. No.
Like, his athleticism on the field is not suffering at all. So that alone is a reason why I don't think there's even any remote consideration of him. He's also still batting third in the lineup, second or third, and he will not get moved down. He's Paul motherfucking Goldschmidt.
No. If Dusty Baker was the manager of this team, Jose Abreu would still be up in the lineup. He would still be batting fifth, which is where I think he was batting last season too. Fifth, but he was rallying.
Oh, that's the thing, is like, Paul Goldschmidt is still only a year removed from his MVP. Jose Abreu is not, and
no, he's year, a couple like of years
frustration removed. With him last year.
Yeah, well, and but then he warmed up, because everyone's always a notorious slow starter. Okay, that's fine, but you know what? I got two of these motherfuckers on this team. I don't need multiple slow starters. There can only be one.
At some point, it doesn't work.
It does.
It's too cold for too long.
So frustrating. But regardless, guys, we appreciate you guys hanging out with us and talking all of the balls. Speaking of talking all the balls, we're going to bring back a segment that I like to call Talk Dirty to Me, because I sent this to Kelsey today. Yeah, and it just it made me giggle, because guys, what is happening? Do you know that? Do you hear the words, like, when they say them? Do you think they actually hear it and they're all, maybe I should have worded that differently? I don't think so, because I was listening to the radio broadcast of the Astros game today, and I love our radio broadcasters, freaking Robert Ford and Steve Sparky. Great team, very energetic, love the broadcast. But Robert Ford today was talking about the pitching to Michael Harris, and he said he stayed hard on Michael Harris the entire time. There was a pause after he stayed hard. And I was like, finish that thought now? Yeah. And then I was like, okay, so maybe he realized what he said and whatever, right? No, because then literally 2 minutes later, Steve Sparks said almost the exact same thing that whoever was pitching, I think it was Brian Abreu, because I think Brian Abreu struck him out, and how Brian Abreu stayed hard on him the entire time, and I'm all stuffing it right now. So, guys, you're welcome for that, because apparently I have corrupted Kelsey, and now she thinks about these things too.
Join us again for more commentary such as this, because I think my ear just didn't catch it as much before. I didn't go 12 year old brain mode, and now thanks to you,
you're welcome. Yep, it just squirted right through the hole. Just saying. it's so bad. I love it so much. So guys, if you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoy any of our episodes, please hit the subscribe button on YouTube, hit the like button on the episode, give us a 5-star rating, give us all of the nice words. Again, 4 words: noseball is hilarious. That's all we ask. That is all we ask. I would say that you can just put the 3 words, but I'm pretty sure you have to put at least 4 words. You could just say known ball knowers, or these girls are known ball knowers. We'll take that too. All right. So with that said, Kelsey, tell the people where they can find you on the interwebs.
Best place to find me for all the baseball content is on Twitter at KBirdTweets, which you can see here on your screen. KBURD tweets. Got a link tree in my bio there, and that'll link you to my weekly podcast, Peace, Love, and Baseball. And you can find that on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. So basically, if you found this, it's pretty easy to find that. Just type in Peace, Love, and Baseball, and I'll be there unless I'm here.
Indeed. With that said, we are going to sign off, and we appreciate all of you guys. And we will see you next time. Yay, baseball. I say baseball. I lost my mouse. There it is. Okay, we're going to hit and record now. Okay, bye.